Okay, so to start off this morning, I have a question. Why did you come today? Why did you come to church today? Is it school holiday, like Dirk says, the holiday fever's got a couple of people in bed, but a couple of people rocked up. So why did you come? I know for the Trons it was by accident. So God works in mysterious ways. For some of you, it's out of habit. You don't want to feel guilty during the week for not being around. Some of you need healing. Some of you want to come worship. Some of you want to invited a friend, whatever it is. Why did you come today? The reason I asked was, last night I said to God, what does he want to do? Last week when Melanie was here, she says she always, before she speaks to a congregation, says, God, what do you want to say? And last week it was, don't give up, for those of you that were here last week. Last night I asked God, what does he want to do? What does he want to do today? We don't want to miss it. Does he want to help people with forgiveness? Does he want to unshackle some chains? And I felt him say he wants to meet every single person exactly where they're at. Isn't it an amazing God that we serve? Every single one of you that came through the doors today, as you came through the door, God's saying, I don't have a universal message this morning. I want to meet you where you are at today. Is it physical? Is it emotional? Is it spiritual? Is it relational? Is it financial? Your need, God knows better than any one of us. He wants to meet you where you're at so we can go further in him. The picture I got during the week while I was preparing for this morning was two sponges. The one sponge was dry, cracked, ready to soak up anything coming its way. The other sponge was oozing, overflowing. Dis daai wat jy hom vashou en jy druk hom en loop het uit, hier by jou arm af. And the one sponge that's oozing, wet to the brim, is soaked up in God and whatever God's got to give. And by spending time with him and being in his presence, it's soaked. But the dry sponge can suck up anything coming its way. It could be negativity. It could be unforgiveness. Whatever it is coming your way, jy's so droog, you'll take anything. En ek voel net die Here sê vanoggend, ons moet seker maak, the sponges are probably our hearts. We must be sure, like we know that there are no dry spots. Okay. So sponges. So we have to make sure that we are overflowing so that as die wêreld jou druk, sometimes it's a friend, sometimes it's an enemy. But when you get a squeeze, you've got something to give. The dry sponge has got nothing to give. I can eintlik net, if the enemy comes with whatever negativity is coming, you're going to suck it up because you need a something. So, to go on to the passage that I've got for this morning, it's out of the book of Matthew, Matthew 5. So, interesting enough, Matthew was written by, we think, the disciple Matthew, who was also known as Levi. He was a tax collector, and he met Jesus and gave up his whole life to follow Jesus. He actually even threw a party at his house to introduce his friends and family to this Jesus that he'd found and that gave him a purpose to live. And isn't that what we do? The moment we get saved, the moment we have an encounter with God, we want to tell all our friends and all our family, and they all think we're absolutely nuts. We want to invite them all. We want to say, please come meet him. Please come see. Please come. And this is what Matthew did. He threw a party at his house so his friends and family could meet Jesus. Now they say it's very similar to the book of Mark, except the book of Mark is written for unbelievers. And the book of Matthew is written for believers. How often you've accepted Jesus, how to live life in the kingdom. And Matthew also talks about righteous doing as well as believing. Righteous doing as well as believing, because there is a doing after we've decided to believe. Smith Wigglesworth says, to hunger and thirst after righteousness is when nothing in the world can fascinate us so much as being near to God. So if you wondered what righteousness was, when nothing in the world can fascinate you as much as being near to God. So out of the book of Matthew, Jesus is talking to a group of people, and you know all the parables. You can read the whole book of Matthew 5 at home if you have time. But Matthew 5:38 says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you." So interesting enough, in this time in history when Jesus was talking to this crowd, is when the Romans, ek wil net my feite reg kry, the Roman powers were occupying Israel at this time. The Romans were Gentiles, they were pagans, they were unwanted foreigners, and they were generally despised. And in this scripture, go the extra mile, Jesus was referring to the Roman law that stated that at that time, any Roman soldier could stop a Jewish man on the road and force him to drop what he was carrying and assist the soldier. A lot of Jewish people even marked a mile from their home. So as hulle uit hulle huis het gestaan, ek en Dirk het daar vanoggend gekyk, it's 1.6 kilometers. So it's from Camp Roadhouse to church. Daaroggend in Parkweg. Daaronder in Parkweg. So what the Jewish people did is from their home, in all directions, they measured a mile. In case you leave your house in the morning and a Roman soldier comes and says, "You have to help me." They can force you to help them. You have to put down what you're doing. You have to carry his bag for him for a mile by law. And then he's on his way. So at 1.6 kilometer, and to think by myself, as ek nou met, of Dirk nou met the Roman soldier gestap het for a mile, he has to come back home because he's left his stuff there. So it's over 3 kilometers then. Selle temperatuur is uitswering, Israel, I guess, very similar, hot, dry. So Jesus is saying, and now he's not telling them how to treat their friends and their families. This is how you treat the enemy. The people in your camp that you absolutely despise. You, met halfte van die Israelite, met alles in hulle, they wanted war. And what does God say? We're not going to pick up weapons. If that guy says, "Walk with me a mile," then you walk 2. Now make that sum. You walk 2 en dan moet jy terugkom huis toe. Dis oor die 6 kilometer. That's the war that God declares on the enemy, on our enemy. So nou gaan ek net praat oor how to treat your enemy. We're not talking about friends. We're not talking about family. We're not talking about fellow believers. We're talking about the enemy. The second mile that you go with that person is not the obligation. The obligation was the first mile. But the second mile is the opportunity. That's when you get to share what God's given you. Because freedom was to come not from a Jewish uprising or a revolt, but from the internal liberty of being free to serve your enemy, testifying to the transforming power of God in a person's soul. The first mile is not going to do that. The first mile, that soldier knows, he has to do it. But the minute you start taking, do you know what? I'm going to carry your bag for the second mile. He's going to go, what you on about? Why? Then you can say, I want to tell you about this king of mine. Who are you? What's your name? The opportunity is in the second mile. So don't think at work if you serve your boss with a basic. You rock up at 5, you're at 8, you leave at 5. You do what you have to do. I'm a Christian, he's going to have to see it. It doesn't come in the obligation. It comes when we go the extra. It comes when you forgive your enemy. It comes when you write a letter to your boss saying, "Hell, it wasn't easy serving under you yesterday, but I forgive you. I want to help you." This is the Jesus that we serve. Ek is amper weary om te praat oor what he says, how we must treat one another. Because if this is what we do for the enemy, what do you do for your friend? The word says you lay down your life. The enemy gets a second mile, but your friend, your brother in Christ, you get to lay down your life for them. I just realized, God, I'm far too selfish. I'm far too involved in my own life, in my own things. I don't even go the extra mile for my own family, never mind the enemy. How am I going to get there? How's God going to do it in me? How's he going to do it in my heart? How's he going to do it in my mind? I want to read this piece on the extra mile. The only way for good to win over the evil was to go beyond the expectation. The second mile in our lives makes the Roman, whoever your enemy is, makes the enemy ask why we would go the extra distance under such a heavy burden. The second mile opens up conversation that would never happen in the first mile. The second mile makes us better humans and better Christians. It builds the muscle we need to carry the gospel and the endurance we need to remain faithful through the seasons of life and not just for a season of life. We must be second mile people. We must train our kids to be second mile people. The teacher that you don't like at school, do huiswerk met extra liefde. Send her the extra chocolate. We have to learn to love our enemies because that turns the world on its head. We read magazines and we watch movies and we are bombarded with veiligheid. Jy moet veilig wees. People have boundaries. People can't take advantage of you. Don't let people take advantage of you. Jesus says, let them take advantage of you. You've denied yourself anyway. He's talking to Christians here. Once you've given your life to me, you belong to me. You're not your own anymore. So mense kan nie eintlik op jou trap nie, want because you did. Go the extra mile. And the only way we're going to do it is when we understand how he feels about us and what he has done for us and that we have been ransomed. Out of that overflows the second mile. So to carry on, there's many areas that we can take the extra mile into. One of the areas I want to talk about today is the area of relationships. Because I feel like it's the most important thing in life, is sound relationships. Nobody on their deathbed has ever said, oh, I wish I made more money. I wish I collected more things. I wish I served more. Usually it's about relationship. I'm sorry I never forgave my mother. I'm sorry I never spent more time with my kids. I'm sorry I never reconciled with my brother. Usually, at the end of your life, it's about relationships. So don't wait until the end. Let's do it now. If God's calling us to go the second mile for the enemy, what is he calling us as Christians to go to, the distance to go to for relationships now? With saved friends, with unsaved friends, family? What do your relationships look like? Maak hou julle oë toe. Net vir 'n oomblik. Almal se oë toe. What do your relationships look like now? Okay. So for most of you, one or two names come to mind. For a lot of you, names maybe 10, 20 years back. Some of you maybe names last month or two. But in what area of your life is there not a sound relationship, friend or enemy? Doesn't matter. It's up to you. God's given you the power to go the extra mile, to open up, to reconcile. The next area we can go the extra mile in is relationship and reconciliation. Now, the only three sentences that come to mind in reconciliation that we don't use or don't hear often enough is, you can open your eyes for those who are still closed. The three sentences are, I am sorry. We're talking on reconciliation as Christians in your relationship. Three sentences. One is, I am sorry. You can use the sentence, I could have been wrong. I could have been wrong. And the third one is, I forgive you. So we'll be talking reconciliation. For a lot of us to say any one of these sentences to whoever we've got in mind is going the extra mile, because in your own strength, you're not going to be able to do it. But the extra mile is, I am sorry. I could have been wrong. Or I forgive you. I always try and teach my kids, I'll tell you when the breakthrough has come, but it's far better to be kind than to be right. Because being right isn't really going to lead people, streams and streams of people, into eternity. I am right. You are wrong. Who's going to follow a person like that? But be kind. Say, listen, I think it's this. I could be wrong. I'm pretty sure of my case, but I could be wrong. Be kind. Because in being kind, you're a ray that points to the source. Look, if he's the sun, and I'm just a ray, I want to point back to him. I'm not going to do that by being right all the time. I'm going to be that by being kind. I'm going to be that by going the extra mile for my enemy, for laying down my life for my friends. That's how I'm going to point to him. Jesus taught us not to fight or retaliate with weapons. He also didn't teach us to passively accept the wrong that's going on around us. But he taught us and showed us how to fight using the fruits of the Spirit. That's the fight. The weapons, what do we fight with? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. It's a fight. You guys know that doesn't come easy. It doesn't come jolly easy. That's the fight. I always say to God, I'm so scared of giving too much of my time or my energy to a thing that's not going to work. You know, how can I be sure that it's going to yield a harvest? Yeah, God, I want to use my time and my energy for something that's going to bring a harvest. And the word says 3 out of every 4 seeds probably won't. But 1 out of every 4 in good ground will bring a harvest 30, 60, 100-fold, and it's going to be worth it. And what I was saying to God lately is, God, if I'm doing it for myself, if Manu's my friend that I'm trying to love, and I'm spending time with her, and I'm putting in, and vrachtig, she doesn't want to turn, she doesn't want to listen, she doesn't want to, I don't have to get disappointed and discouraged, because I'm not doing it for me. I'm doing it for God. I can go to bed at night saying, God, I gave it my best. I gave it my jolly best. If I do it for myself, I go to bed saying I'm going to give up. Manu, I gave it 2 years of my time. Nothing's changed. I'm going to give up. I'm not going to give to anybody else. Who did I do it for then? If I gave 2 years into Manu's life and she doesn't change, but it was out of radical obedience because I felt God telling me to, I can go to bed at night and say, Jesus, I gave it my best. I know you did too. We're still a team. Let's carry on. 3 out of the 4 seeds won't take, but the one that you go the extra mile with that does take 30, 60, 100-fold. I wanted to, ek hoop ek het my persoonlike rede reg, but years ago, I got saved into Josh Den in the year 2000, which is 19 years ago. And Andrew at that stage was telling a story, so the story must be about 20-odd years old. Andrew says he was, and that time, Andrew was leading a church of less than what we are here. It's one congregation in Tableview. We were meeting at the Leybrand van Niekerk Hall. That's where I got saved. Under 100 people. Andrew, young surfer dude with his beautiful blonde wife and a couple of surfers and a couple of older folks in the congregation. He gave a testimony about how he was discipling a young Christian guy about his finances. This guy just couldn't jolly make it. Not a month, not a week, not 2 weeks on his budget. And Andrew was teaching and telling and helping and giving and guiding. And this guy just wouldn't listen. Eventually, after months and months, the guy came to Andrew and said, I've got bad debt. Andrew said, but I told you what to do. I told you exactly what to do. The steps. The guy says, I'm in bad debt. Andrew went home. He was miff. He says, God, there's nothing more I can do. I gave him my advice. I gave him my time. I loved him. At that stage, Andrew was saving up for a boat. Now, Andrew's love is the sea. For those of you that don't know Andrew, he was saving up for a boat. And I think at that time, I could be wrong. I think it was 10,000 rand he'd saved up. Now, 20-odd years ago, 10,000 rand was a lot of money. And Andrew felt God saying, give that guy your savings.
He said, what? But I told him what to do. I told him exactly what to do to not get into this mess. Why must I be the one to bail him out? God says, because I do it for you every time. I do it for you every single time you mess up. God says, I'm there for you. I bail you out. I wipe the slate clean. Give him your savings. Andrew didn't get a boat. I don't know what happened to this guy. I don't know if he still serves the Lord. But can Andrew go to bed at night saying, God, I was radically obedient? Yes, he can. Is that guy's salvation on Andrew or on God? It's on God. We can't change a heart. I can't change a mind and a heart and an attitude. Only God can. All I can do is serve and love out of radical obedience what God tells me to do. I want to end with this. So Matthew says, first you believe, but you believe in order that you can do. There is a doing that comes with the believing. I want to read this piece to you guys. It stood out to me. Let's be a generation who will refuse to live an ordinary life in Jesus Christ, who will pursue disciplines of holiness, habits of righteousness, virtues of goodness, and acts of justice. Let's be a people who will live sacrificially, serve indiscriminately, and love unconditionally. Let's be a people who will have eyes that see the best in others, hearts that forgive the worst, minds that pursue the highest, and souls that seek the depth of faith. A generation that will not conform to the patterns of the world, but be transformed by the renewal of their minds, the reinvention of their hearts, and the reactivation of their feet. Let's be agents of change. God, reactivate my feet. Because I can have it here, and I can have it here. But if I ain't walking and spreading it, I ain't living this. Reactivate my feet. And like Andrew says, the poor will always be among us. You can't feed every hungry mouth in this town. And let's make sure the mouths in this congregation are fed first. But be radically obedient to the ones God does tell you to serve. Be radically obedient to the second mile in your enemy's life. Before we go into worship, I felt God saying there's a treasure chest here. There's treasures in this place. We can turn, just the few of us in this hall this morning can change this whole town upside down. I can promise you that. I can promise you that. 1-1, we won't do it. Because 1-1, we don't all have the same gifts. But as a group, we can change this town and the nations around us upside down. We can. Andrew was radically obedient with his savings, and he now leads 4,000 people, just Josh Jenner's, not to mention congregations around the world that have 412 congregations locked into to Josh Jenner. Because he's lived a life of radical obedience. And if you're not sure, go to someone you trust in God. Mario. Go to Jan and say, Jan, I feel God saying, I must give this to this person. I'm not sure. Number one, let your wife agree with you on it. Otherwise, there's going to be problems. But Jan, will you pray with us? We're not sure, but we don't want to miss what God's got to do. Will you pray with us? Don't do it alone. Don't go it alone. I want to read this piece. It's about the gifts in this room today. Don't be like the man in the lesson from the Gospel, Matthew 25, who buried his talents. There are many like him, with tombstones in the cemetery of neglect. The greatest loss to the world has been caused not by floods, fires, disease, epidemics, or the crash of financial markets, but by people who have buried their talents. There's nothing more pathetic than a trained teacher who refuses to speak, a trained voice that won't sing, a rich businessman who won't give to the poor, an articulate lawyer who won't propose a toast at a wedding or birthday party. There are men and women from all walks of life who have been blessed but refuse to be a blessing. Don't be like them. There's no difference in effect between people who neglect their talent and those who misuse their talent for dishonest purposes. It may not be illegal, but it's nevertheless a crime. You don't have to have a huge talent, but serve where you are with what you've got. Alice Bennett put it this way in a poem. I have no voice for singing. I cannot make a speech. I have no gift for music. I know I cannot teach. I am no good at leading. I cannot organize. And anything I write will never win a prize. But at roll call, at a meeting, I always answer here. After the programs, when others are performing, I lend a listening ear. After the program's over, I praise its every part. My words are not to flatter, I mean it from the heart. It seems my only talent is neither big nor rare, just to listen and encourage and fill a vacant chair. But all the gifted people could not so brightly shine were it not for those who use a talent such as mine. So the point is this: some of us can teach, some of us can love, some of us can sing, some of us can encourage, some of us can pray. Let's use it. Before we go into worship, I felt there's one or more than one people here who, it's like you have a stumbling block in your faith. You've given your life to God, you're on this road, but there's a stumbling block. It's between you and your future and God. Dis amper soos 'n domino rally. En die domino's val totdat daai enetjie is wat so val. En dan kan die res nie meer, it can't continue. And these guys, these people here today, there's a stumbling block in your faith. And you're saying, God, I can't get past it. If it's physical, if it's forgiveness, if it's whatever it is, you know what it is. I don't know what it is. God knows what it is. It's a stumbling block between you and the future that God has for you. It's actually your walk. It's actually your life. It's actually your inheritance. And God wants to say, let's move the block out the way. Or you give it to him, or we smash it. But mak erns met die stumbling block. So if that's you today in worship, you can come to the front. There'll be guys that will pray. Let's not walk out here and not be changed. Not be willing to give, not be willing to go, not be willing to give. So in worship, soak your sponge. If there's any dry parts, soak it to the brim. Soak it to the brim. And if there's any stumbling block that you cannot conquer on your own, it's a group of people here, many people here today that would love to pray with you. Come to the front, even if it's more than one. Let's smash that rock and we run for God. Thank you.